Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
How's it, guys? Welcome to another episode of Box Office here at Bishop's. And guess what? Our special guest today is the Bishop's old boy and a legendary Springbok, Robbie Fleck, who's going to be Jean de Villiers with Schalk Burger as we preview what could be the penultimate weekend of Six Nations rugby. Can Ireland wrap it up with a bonus point win? We're going to discuss it all on the show today. The box office is now open. We're good to shoot, boys.
Huh?
Ready to go?
Oh, sorry.
You want a beer, please?
Huh?
We get
two
sweet
beer? No, thanks. We've got non-alcoholic.
Scared of drinking?
Yeah.
Huh? Move it closer.
Such responsibilities, agent. We're going on a hunting trip tomorrow.
Were you guys going hunting?
No. I don't tell people we're going on a hunting trip.
Ashcom, drinking
because
trip.
Because there's no hunting happening there.
Mm-hmm. Who's
it's
going
2 days
with?
Of driving around in the Kalahari and drinking.
It's amazing, though.
You're actually living the dream, eh? Go to the world. You go to the World Cup for 6 months. You do nothing.
6 months.
Which World Cup was 6 months?
You get paid and you did nothing.
Which World Cup?
Huh? It was amazing.
This one, no, recent one. Where you? How's where you landed
months?
Up like a swallowing a Weaver?
That was about. 20, that was about 20k. <Yeah.
laughs> he's awesome.
6 months. Is this how we're going to start? Okay.
But I mean, you did 6 months, paid holiday.
Thank you. We've got to show a little video. Okay. A video of day one. Yeah. Show me.
So
day
one. We don't work. No. We don't work with me there.
No, this is not work.
No.
What is it?
What? You're talking about hunting trips.
Stop putting your nose in someone else's business.
Okay. Welcome to another episode of the Box Office. A big weekend of Six Nations coming up. We're still here at Bishop's, but this time we've got our first old Bishop's boy. Well, ours a little bit Bishop's for 1 year, but this guy got upgraded from Weinberg Boys, Old Springbok Center, Roberto Fleck. Welcome, Flecky, to the box office.
Cheers, Shim. It's good to be here.
That must be the biggest upgrade in the history.
Weinberg to Bishop's.
I've been called a traitor because my son's here. Weinberg to Bishop's. How did that happen? Sorry, by the way, Schalk Burger and Jean de Villiers. Before I forget, please.
More importantly.
Yeah, more importantly.
Shim, it was...
Money.
No, I think it was more got to do with marks, actually. I wasn't doing particularly well at Weinberg at that stage. And my old man made a decision. You know, he just pulled the plug and said, you're going to Bishop's. So yeah. I came here kicking and screaming, and I landed up having a really good time.
Did the marks improve, Flicky?
No.
Well, you got into UCT.
I did. I don't know how I did that. I think that was through
Most
rugby,
of your
actually.
Classes were at Forreys, though.
No, they were. Yeah. No, but look, it was a good change, actually, because, you know, the rugby history here was great, and the way they played the game, and just sort of suited my character and personality. But it's a yin and the yang, and you know, it's always things in balance. And so Weinberg was good to me when I was young. And came
Weinberg toughened you up, definitely.
It definitely toughened me up. You know, you get some soft kids here at Bishop's like Francois Lowe and that.
you guys had a decent side though, didn't you?
No, we did.
1992, the best, considered one of the greatest.
So 92 with Herschel Gibbs, yeah, good side. Dave van Nusselen, Selbon Boom, nice team. And then 93, we were also quite good, yeah.
That's a proper return, eh? In terms of box.
Yeah.
Coming out of a school.
We all saw Herschel play cricket, but everyone who's played with him, Flick, you've told me before, said, this guy was a magician on the rugby field.
Most phenomenal schoolboy rugby player I've ever seen.
There was a clip going around couple of weeks ago of Herschel playing, I think under 21s or under 19s or for Western Province.
I think it was the Craven Week side that they were. I think they won it in Bloem against Free State.
Yeah.
And Stephen Brink and all these proper players were playing. But no, geez, John, he was a special, special rugby player.
Yeah. He made you.
He did. I played outside him. So anybody who played outside him looked good. But yes, there was some good. I mean, for a small school like this, in 1 year to produce some Springboks.
No, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
Selborne and Dave van Oostlin.
Yeah, four Springboks.
Yeah.
Well, three and.
Maybe, who knows, if Gibbs had carried on, he could have been a Springbok.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't often happen. We have a specific school producing that. I mean, Grey College, I think.
Grey College had plenty at one stage.
Yeah, 1 year, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, did you guys play Grey?
No, I think we avoid that fixture.
Especially when they invite you to Bloemfontein, there's no chance.
Story goes like this. In the old days when Bishops was strong and Grey was strong, they would play against each other. But when one of the teams were weak, then they would
say no.
There was a phone call and say no, thanks. And then the last time it happened, Grey gave Bishops a proper hiding.
Ollie LaRue was in that Grey team, wasn't it?
I think that's
that
right. There was a guy called Peter Steenkamp. He was a centre.
Yeah.
And we played out in Pol, at the Pol
Stadium. Oh, yes, Forest, yes. Correct, I remember that.
And it wasn't a pleasant day for Bishops. I think that was in 91 or 1990.
Yeah.
And then since then, I don't think they've played.
How many years were you matric?
Anyway, I was seeing if I was doing a post.
That was a trick question. No,
the post was big in those days. I didn't do it.
Yeah, we had Louis Kuhn did a post.
I got into UCT, John. Twice. That was really exciting.
I'm just asking a question.
Did you go to university?
I did.
No, you didn't.
I did. 1 year. 1 year. Did you finish?
Rugby took over.
Did you
finish? I lasted more than a year, but I didn't finish.
Yeah. No, I did. I went to Stella Marsh. Yeah.
Did you go to Stellenbosch?
1 year.
1 year.
I did 1 year.
You didn't go to
University. What? 1.5 years.
It's gone well.
It was actually 2 years.
This conversation is going viral.
Yeah, that's actually not funny for rugby. Well,
but remember,
studying.
I suppose not.
Guys, can we move on?
Everything online. Flicky, were you well behaved? Yeah, that's cool.
Just keep throwing it out there.
I'm going to get
you're trying to solve the world problems in this conversation.
I want to
talk about 1992 at Bishop. I think of you and Herschel as 17, 18 year olds. There's a lot of trouble coming from above me.
Herbal.
Herschel was a year above you, yeah.
Shim, I was okay.
I love the little four.
I was a house prefect, if that puts things in.
That's because you played first team rugby.
Well, probably.
let me put it this way. Skulk and I can still remember when we were youngsters coming into the Western Province setup, and Flecky and that generation, they were kind of just putting. Playing the
hard
same
work.
Position, he's just put his arm around, showing some maturity in terms of introducing us to the system. And what I remember fondly was after a Curry Cup game, sitting at Newlands in the change room, smoking a cigarette.
we were sitting, we still had the split changing room. Yeah. So, before the showers moved out to the side. So, the shower each side. So, I showered on the forward side. We had dressed in our number ones. We did the function up top, and Flecky said, come down. We each sat in a case of beer, so we were just cracking it underneath. Taking it out from here, all the ice for the recovery wasn't used back in the day, but it was there. And John and Flecky sitting on a chuff.
Was he smoking?
Of course he was.
Yeah,
he
I wanted to be cool.
You had to follow Flecky.
Had to be cool.
How a good mentor.
How else was I going to stay in the side? I
had to make him smoke. Try to mess his lungs up. You can't take a position.
I was used to it. But, look, that's how it was for me. When I first came to Western Province, it was quite sort of amateur in many respects, and we were the first generation of professional rugby players, and you guys were that sort of next generation coming through. And what a privilege to play with you two, I must say. It was great fun.
People might be watching this and they think, professional, what are you kind of showing the youth coming through smoke? But I think it's more the memory of something like that, just enjoying a moment, a moment in time where actually you just friends.
The only thing you know, I really...
That you remember, and yes, the game
totally.
Was gone.
It was not as though it was a regular thing. But no. It was, you know, those special moments, I agree with you.
That the only thing I really long after is those moments.
Yeah.
You know, if you miss, you sit down now, it's not about the tackle or the accolade you got as a player. It's about the memories you made off the field. You know?
No, and the friends, you know, within your playing group, but also with the opposition. I think in those days, I don't know what it's like now, but certainly we made an effort with the opposition, especially in Super Rugby and Test Match Rugby, to make it
big time.
An effort with the Kiwis and the Aussies. You know, we became good friends with those guys.
Scala, these two guys have picked up the same habit of one big night and the next day.
They won and done.
An absolute mess. You guys are exactly the same like it.
Yeah, I'm the same as well. Yeah.
No, you're the worst. He's taken over you. Don't worry, I picked it up in France.
No.
This guy goes into it. All of a sudden, Jean's quiet. He looks like he wants to cry.
I think, well, it's a sign of maturity.
I think it's a fair point from Flecky. You went over there for a holiday. I mean,
went over there to work.
I was still
for
working.
6 months?
Yeah. Yeah. I just got a jaw. Joel in Paris.
Scala, Bull Stormers this last weekend, a big one.
Yeah, I think what is quite clear, no one beats the Bulls 8 times in a row. Eh? Seven was good enough. I actually thought like the Stormers had a chance. But then a couple of things stood out from a technical aspect. Obviously, malfunction of the Stormers lineup. So many 22 entries, only two scores from it. The aerial kicking game, Cannon Moody, Kurt Leardens, outstanding. But also what stood out in that was the lack of work rate for the Stormers to chaperone them or made it hard for them not to get the one-on-one. And then the Bulls through that, I think their forward pack just edged the Stormers through physicality during the course of the day. And, you know, for me, certain players that just put more calm than I think we were. And I think our start couldn't have gone worse. Discipline, you know, first carry out by Steve Satoli, ball security. And it was raining before, get stripped of it. And Bulls do something of what they do in the Northern Hemisphere, 13-man drive. I mean, we haven't seen that from them in Yonks. You know, that's normally Wales. You know, that's Warren Gatlin in Wales where they chuck everyone in. Only guy not entering it was Johan Huisen, and obviously didn't fancy getting his toes stood on. But yeah, it was impressive from the Bulls and top of the log in the URC, which is so important. At this time of the season, you're jockeying for getting a nice position to get yourself into the playoffs. The Stormers are seventh. They run the risk of traveling a lot during that final part of the season. I know they've got two home games coming up now. I think they've got Edinburgh and Ulster, if I'm not mistaken, coming into town. And, you know, you want to put those two sides away, because it's so hard when you go across there. So impressive by the Bulls. And, you know, you could really see afterwards what it meant to them, the whole environment there.
Nice crowd.
Jeez. Great crowd.
I mean, like biggest, a test match.
Yeah, 51,000 people. Obviously, we were there. The game got delayed through weather, you know, like massive thunderstorm rolled through. And Brannewijn, brandy wine for those guys who don't understand Brannewijn, brandy and Coke. The guys, there was probably about 150 people streaking during that phase, like basically scoring the try of the season, making a massive beeline in the corner. Security could do nothing about it. Like if it's one guy, he's in trouble. But there's 150 people just running on to Loftus. No, it was incredible. And everyone stayed for the kickoff, which started at 6 o'clock. So great performance by the Bulls.
I think had the Bulls lost that game, that would have been diabolical. Mm. Because if you sell out Loftus like that, so really the supporters showing their support to their team. They haven't beaten the Stormers in 7 games. You know, so they pitched up. And I think had the Bulls not pitched up and they lost that game, that would have been you. So in a way, whenever a rivalry like that goes lopsided, you know, it loses the value. So I think, you know, the way that the Bulls started the game. And look, credit to the Stormers. They came back at one stage. And even I was surprised. I mean, you mentioned the kicking game of the Bulls, but at one stage they were kicking it long.
And that's the only time the Stormers got into the game.
And the Stormers looked so good, you know, running it back, getting time.
Warwick Collant for the first time really looked, I mean, they came back from France and he was a bit stop-start.
Yeah.
But he looked amazing on the weekend. Yeah.
Were you surprised with the result, Flicky? Have you been watching a lot of URC?
I didn't watch that game, Shim, but I did bump into the... No, yeah. I was on a water polo tour. I did bump into the Stormers players at the airport. And they weren't happy. They were very frustrated with the performance. And...
Yeah.
they mentioned the penalty count against them, and they said it was their own fault, really. They were just too eager and a little bit ill-disciplined, and they let the Bulls sort of have them for, you know, passage of that game. But the overall take from Damon Willemse, he was like, you know, we actually had them at stages.
19-15 at one stage.
We could have won it, you know. So in the back of their minds, they're going, they put it down to a bad day, and they still believe that they're going to qualify.
Yeah.
And they've got some home games coming. They've got a big game against La Rochelle in terms of the European Championship. Yeah. So that's a focus for them as well. But they've got to get the job done on Ulster, Edinburgh first, qualify. And I still think
Leinster's still coming to Cape Town.
Yes.
Leinster's still coming.
Yes, but it won't be a full strength Leinster. Sure.
Yeah.
Or Ulster for that matter.
But even a second stream Leinster, we've seen, they're very competitive.
Yeah.
I think the Stormers will still make it top.
What about Munster? Yeah. Every time we talk about the Irish team, slide on Munster somewhere.
I think the...
No, you're going to ignore me.
Stormers will still... I'll get to that. I think the Stormers will still make top eight.
Agreed.
I think we need the Bulls. I think that they're lying second now. I think they just won the game. So Bulls... And we want them to go with it now.
Yeah.
Because we know in this competition, even though Munster came from you know, winning
away
games...
They're doing something similar this year again.
Yeah. Late charge.
Late charge.
But Munster. See how I brought it in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though Munster,
he loves Munster.
Late charge last year, I think it'll be very difficult again this year to not have home playoffs and win the comp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Leinster, surely, I mean, you look at how the untouchable last year, the year before.
Leinster wins this URC.
You reckon?
Articom URC.
Heineken Cup, still too much happening there. Investec Champions Cup.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think a lot depends on how Leinster goes in that competition, because what is
it's
hard,
the Irish
I think
team basically
gets underestimated is if you run in both comps, how difficult it is to win one or both of them. You know, and
I think it's difficult to win both.
It's when and you know, Saracens got to do it. You know, they got the double twice. The only other side to do it really is that great Toulon side, you know, won the double. Even La Rochelle the year they beat Leinster in the final. They battled the net. They lost in the semi final of the top 14. So yeah, I think that has got a big bearing. But they've got the squad to do it. I don't think our South African side's got the squads to compete on both fronts.
No, I think sorry, Shem. URC. I don't think the Bulls can beat Leinster again in Dublin, and it seems like that's the way it's going to pan out. If Bulls finish...
Or final.
Final.
Okay.
If Bulls finish first, in other words, final at Loftus, you know, then you back them. Then they back them. Yeah, and that's why I'm feeling
almost
at this
final,
stage,
how good would that be?
Yeah, at this stage, I think Leinster will take that comp. In Investec Champions Cup, Bordeaux has been going really well. To lose, obviously, now a bit of a bit of an iffy without Dupont. We don't know if he'll be playing again then or not. And La Rochelle, you know, they can still stake a claim.
So Dupont just goes to seven, and then the first time in 19 years, the French side
win a competition.
Amazing. Shame, his stocks aren't trading bad at the moment, is he?
Come back.
This time.
On the other side, okay, there was another game in Joburg, funny enough. No one focuses on that. How do you
fix
the
shocks?
That
was the only game in Joburg.
How do you
that
fix
was
the Sharks? Because we're talking about good squads. They've got a good squad. You go through that. How do you fix that team? It's unbelievable when you look at them.
Shimmy, if teams go through this, it's more than coaching. It's more than the quality of the player. It's culture.
Yeah, it's culture.
And it's how do you get that culture right? How do this side now identify with Plum and the way he wants to play and approach the game? Because, I mean, in effect, that is, you know, what all of us get measured by. If you're playing for a franchise, you're playing for the box, that culture determines what is required from you as an individual on and off the field to perform at your peak.
Yeah.
And quite clearly that's lacking.
I think that's where the Stormers have been successful over the last couple of years, where Dobbo and the team have connected with the style of play and have connected
strong
with
identity.
The fans of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got a proper identity. What are the Sharks standing for at the moment? Yeah. Have they got a connection to their fans culturally within the side? Are they happy? You know, it looks like it's a struggling environment.
The Ellis Park's a tough place to go, but it's not.
No.
It's not 40 points.
Never.
Not against this line side. No.
And also, I think you guys have mentioned so many times, team versus the individuals. The Sharks have got fantastic individuals.
Yeah. Oh, great! It's not good young players.
It's not a team. You don't see that team environment, and also and again, we're not there, so you don't know the environment. But it's
Plum as head coach, Neil as director of rugby.
Yeah.
And Edward Casillas is very, involved with the rugby stuff as well. It seems, again, I don't know. So you got to pinpoint all those things and say, well, how do we get back on track? Even the players, you look at the BOC players that's there and how they perform. There's something lacking.
Three big personalities as leaders, as you say, in terms of the coaching and management, plus an owner who's also a big personality.
Who had the final say?
Lots of owners.
Lots of owners. So,
but a lot of stuff's coming out, Jimmy, but not a lot of stuff is how we're going to solve them playing rugby.
Yeah.
Like there's a green stadium and there's a lot of other stuff going around and commercially they're very active. But what matters is your performance on the field. That comes first.
Yeah.
And you don't ever hear what's the solution, what's the plan.
And the thing is, the Sharks brand is a really strong brand.
100%.
Rugby brand. You don't want...
We were there together for that...
off the field.
For the Stormers game.
Yeah, the Sharks Stormers. I mean, Sharks. How good was it?
Yeah, so John...
In terms of environment... Yeah,
strong brand it was brilliant. Field, but what is their brand on the field?
Yeah, yeah. No, but that's what I'm... And that's essentially what determines it. So... Again, as I mentioned with the Vodacom Bulls fans coming out and supporting them, the Sharks fans did the same, but on the field they weren't able to kind of put up a performance that justified that. And then, so if you're losing and the fans come out, they show support and you're not doing your part, it can go haywire quite quickly. And it's not a Sharks team that deserves to be bottom of the log.
Ironically,
they'll probably go well in Europe, because they've got a bit of a momentum there. And their top players come and they reckon, okay, we're playing in a round of top 16 in the Challenge Cup. And they'll probably go right there. I mean, they'll probably go all the way because they should with the squad they've got. But the rest of it, I think it's so hard when you play for the BOC and you come back and you want to, your bread and butter is the Sharks, VURC. You want that to run smoothly. You want to play for your franchise. So I think for those top players, it's bloody hard to come back from the BOC, which is their happy place, and now to the Sharks, where they won one game out of how many? 11? 12? And try and perform in
11,
there.
11, yeah.
And you can see the frustration in the players' faces.
Yeah, big time.
Again, I bumped them into the airport on the way up and, had a chat to Bongi and that. They didn't say as much, but you can see it.
You can see they're feeling it.
There's pure frustration there.
Yeah.
Flecky, you handed over, you got the Stormers job from Eddie Jones.
Yeah.
Working you got the Eddie, hospital
four
pass.
Weeks. 4 weeks.
You got a hospital pass. There we go. Take it.
Did you get a hospital pass from me? How was working with Eddie? How was it? I mean, you or Skulk, John, both of you guys have worked with him.
How was the week?
We heard a lot of. How was the week with Eddie?
He was here for a week, but we only saw him for 2 days. He was he jetted off to Twickenham.
On Tabletop Mountain.
Yeah. Look, I mean, Eddie's Eddie, He's quite entertaining. He's a hard guy.
Yeah.
He knows his rugby. But, look, we were all quite excited for the fact that a guy his caliber was coming here. And at that stage, Stormers rugby needed an injection of experience. And Rassi had left as director of rugby. Alistair had left. And we needed somebody to take over the reins. Whether he would have understood Cape Town and, our rugby culture, I think he probably would have struggled.
Would have made his mark somehow there.
He would have done something, to get the headlines, But instead, he signed up for a bigger gig. But... I guess, was it a hospital pass? Look, I felt that I was probably ready for it at that stage. I'd been an assistant to Alistair for 6 years and had worked underneath Rassi. So I'd worked with experienced players. At the stage, I thought I was ready for it. In hindsight, probably not. I needed to do a few more gigs as a head coach, probably elsewhere. I cut my teeth there. Or I needed another experienced international coach to come here and probably learn from a John
Eddie Mitchell, would have been a good fit if he'd stuck
Eddie
around.
Eddie would have
for
been great, for me.
From a learning point of view.
From a learning point of view, and it was 4 good years, but it was tough, I must say. And the environment was changing here. Western Province was, under serious scrutiny at that stage. And it wasn't an easy coaching gig.
Yeah. Tommy, you made Sia captain for the first time, eh?
Yeah.
Did you know it would go this well?
I always knew there was something there,
You made him, Stormers, obviously, Stormers captain.
Yeah.
I can remember, before you answer, I can remember at Sia's wedding, I don't know if you remember the conversation. Mm. It was before, even before he made him captain. And we had a conversation at his wedding, and he said he's going to make him captain. Just listen to the way that he talks. Listen, you know, look at him and how he deals with people and all of that. So credit to you for that.
No, yeah, it was an obvious choice. You know, at the end of the day, we like you said, we sat at that wedding, and the way Sia spoke about his family, his friends, his teammates. It was inspirational stuff, and from where he came from, and he was just the right fit for us as a Stormers group at that stage, pulling people together, because the Stormers was fragmented at that stage. You know, there was chaos above, there was pressure from outside. We had to perform, and I needed someone to pull the guys together. And he was raw as anything, and you know, and he had been under the guidance of Sculler and John in the past, and he would have picked up some
more Sculler than John as a loose forward.
Well, no, in terms of leadership, you know.
More scholar than John.
But, you know, there's no book, you know, there's no book that Sia read from, and that's the beauty about him as a leader.
Yeah.
It's all there. It's all natural. And he was learning on the go, and I think that's the best part of his leadership, was that he was learning on the go. But he had the respect of everyone, you know, from a friendship point of view. And, for me, it worked, you know, wonderfully well. And we were both young leaders at that stage, and we sort of relied on each other, and we made lots of mistakes in those early stages, but I certainly grew as a coach, and he grew as a leader, and you know, he's now turned out to be
one of the
most successful leaders in world rugby.
And even now still, he's not threatened by others coming in and
but time for everybody
giving also. Advice or whatever, you know, he's open to it. So if he is happy to say, no, I don't know, you know, help me.
Yeah,
or that's the best part of it.
Of him, so.
It's called humility, showing vulnerability. Well done, Sculler. You did a great job. Flecky.
Thank you.
Thank you. Grooming, you know. you 1998, Springbok debut, a lot of 95 World Cup guys. What was it like walking into that change room full of all those guys?
The team was well established in 98. They had just gone on that 17 match unbeaten run.
How was Nick?
No, Nick was great. I mean, I loved Nick. You know, he's a character. He calls a spade a spade or a spade a shovel. It's he's in your face.
But he's right there.
And he's right always. But, you know, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed his honesty, and he was a tough guy. But that team was well established at that stage, and there was Joost and, you know, Mark Andrews and all these legendary players that, you know, I grew up watching. And I mean, it was an amazing thing to just be part of it. I was a midweek player in 98 and went on tour. I played behind Christian Stewart, which is, I still don't understand.
How did that happen?
And he'll remind you about that.
I have no idea how that happened. But but there was young guys coming through. There was Skinstead and Monty and
Selborne,
you know. So there was good energy and it was a... It was an amazing setup in that 98 trip, you know. And then going into the 99 World Cup, you know, we were quite confident that that we'll do well, you know. I mean, obviously Gary missed out on selection, which was, you know, controversy around that, and that sort of derailed us a little bit. But Joost was able to galvanize the guys in his own sort of way, and we actually landed up playing quite well in that 99 World Cup.
A drop kick away from it.
A drop kick. I actually watched that game the other day. It's the first time I've watched it.
Where did you find it?
On YouTube.
On YouTube.
My kids were scanning through, and then suddenly there the game was. Right. First time I've ever watched it.
A couple of things that stood out this week. Yanni De Beer's penalty to get you guys into the extra time.
Was amazing from the touchline.
Oh, incredible. Was that nudge? And then Larkham's drop kick drops a thing like this. It goes like a frisbee.
Probably the ugliest drop kick you've ever seen.
And it's only one.
Tim Horan in that game, he was down and out 24 hours with
Castro.
And he was done. And he had the most amazing game against us. He was man
of the World Cup.
And he cut through us at will. And it showed the character of that guy. I mean, that guy was just phenomenal.
And he came back.
And on the beer straight away off.
He came back from a big,
big knee injury
before that World Cup.
Player of the World
Cup. It was an exceptional Australian side. Yeah. And I do think that should have been a fitting final between us and them. And it was the probably the best game of the World Cup. But, you know, we lost out to them.
What's the best place you toured off the field?
Best place I've toured off the field? Well, it's Argentina's fun.
South America.
Everyone says Argentina.
South America.
I was thinking the same thing, Argentina. Everybody loves Argentina.
I always enjoyed, you know, going to England. I mean, I love, you know, touring there. I love going to France as well. But
why did you try punch Ben Cohen?
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. That the one at Twickenham. At Twickenham with a glove.
I just pushed him off. Well, he actually gave me an egg flop. You know, he gave me one of those.
But to your question, it's actually not.
I've always been provoked. I've never been an instigator.
It's actually not where you tour. It's who you tour with.
Yeah.
If you've got a nice crew, a lacquered team.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you go. You have a hell of a time.
I mean, in 1999, we were stuck in Glasgow for the World Cup. I mean, there's not much happening
there. No, there's nothing happening there.
Glasgow.
Oh, we had a jaw. You know, before the World Cup, and then we were in Edinburgh for a bit, and then we were all over. But that World Cup was radical. I mean, like in terms of, I think we were still trying to get out of that amateur side. And when there was an opportunity to go and have fun, geez, we had fun.
Was that I think Justin Marshall told us a story, the third, fourth playoff, when the All Blacks walked past the pub and he looked in and there was Flecky.
And they knew they were in trouble.
You guys played against each other, I think, on the Friday night.
He might have walked past the pub from another pub. Look, it was, you know, that World Cup we played against. So we played England and Yanni did the drop goals, whatever, and Nick calls us in and he goes, right, we're in a semi-final and we're heading back to London and we're going to go take the position of the English. They were in the hotel that we were staying in and all their luggage was still there when we rocked up. But he said to us, guys, no one's drinking. No one's allowed to go out after the England performance. Yeah. Wow. So US took it. Okay, cool. We're not allowed to go out the hotel. So then we just had a draw in the hotel with all the fans. And we just had a proper, you know, party. And then we went through and then we played that semi-final and it was an amazing game, whatever. And obviously we were disappointed and Nick was disappointed, but he felt that we had, you know, it was a good campaign. He just said, listen, guys,
if it was there,
you guys you're done. And we'll see you at captain's run. We're going to play New Zealand in the third or fourth playoff. I think we're playing them on the Friday or the Thursday night or something like that. And he said, I don't want to see you. We'll just have a captain's run. So for 4 days, 5 days, he gave the guys off. There the guys are jetting off to Amsterdam. They're going this way. And myself and Skinstead decided, no, we're going to stay in London. And we had the best time ever. Building up, hooking up with all the Kiwis, all the Aussies. It was an amazing experience, you know. So we landed up playing those Kiwis and beating them. But it was just, that for me was like how rugby should be, you know. There was less so much about the result at the end of the day, and we made good friends and connections.
No social media.
Heineke Meyer was support staff then, and he remembered this. So when we did it in 2015, we obviously lost against All Blacks 20 points to 18. He said, it's against my nature, but it worked. I can't coach you guys on Monday. Captain's run game against Argentina. That's what we did. Also got the result.
Exactly. No, amazing.
It was an amazing week, though.
Similar Bariloche week.
Sure.
That was probably the greatest.
I've heard about that week
trip,
and I wasn't even there.
Yeah.
Of that was my big life. We basically turned a Irish pub in Bariloche into our home.
That's an Argentina holiday spot in Argentina. Where
but that never happened.
Argentina. Then there was
a bye week.
There was a bye week,
and then only Wales the week after that.
So we're meant to go on a skiing, horse riding, hiking.
I didn't see any. I didn't see any of that, but I saw the Irish pub for a week.
But it's like a ski resort, and we're there out of the summer.
Yeah,
out of season. So there aren't any people there. So we go down the road. First Irish pub we walk into. First pub, Irish pub. Go in. There's like no one there. Five of us, whatever.
Sunday night. No.
Okay, we decide no. We ask him, no, what's going on? There's people. He said, no, 1 hour. 1 hour. Band, 1 hour. So we walk around the rest of the town, basically, trying to see where it's happening. Eventually get back to this pub again. So we decide, okay, we'll sit here. eventually 1 a.m. in the morning, the band starts playing. That place is packed. Packed. We leave there, go to the hotel, have breakfast, go to bed.
Wake up. That kind like of I think every night I was there, up, I bought something.
No,
I
had a cap, lunch.
I had a beer jug, I had a, and then the one night was cold, so I put over, I bought like a, what was it called? Not Kilkenny's?
Something it was like Kilkenny's, that. It was.
Yeah. It was amazing. The other day, I have some photos of it
and
popped around.
You landed up being world champions. Or you were world champions.
So remember, yeah. We did a line-out.
We beat Wales quite convincingly.
Yeah, we did a line-out session somewhere on like a stud farm around the back. And you know, like you've been boozing a lot. When you go up in the air, you never could like sort of gauge when your feet was going to hit the deck. So one, you land straight and like you get that shiver running up the back. The next one, you just collapse. And everyone's like, Scala, what's wrong? I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to touch the ground, guys. I've been on the source for like too long.
It was a good week that though. It was a great week. Tell me, Flicky, now 2002 was your last box game, right? So you missed Camp Stalldrot.
2002, yes, I missed it, yeah.
Jean?
You missed it. I missed Camp Stalldrot as well.
Jean did his knee.
Only 1 year.
I did it. I'm a survivor. I tell you.
Why are you tapping your foot on the ground?
you've just been selected for the box, the first time ever. So you get
dark
back.
Memories,
you before WhatsApp, whatever you message, BlackBerry Messenger, a few people.
Nokia.
You've got to now be in a bus straight after. So I'm like, okay, guys, I've got to leave myself in here. We're going on some team building. So now, like you, we go there. We had to strap our feet up because we were bare feet most of the time. But you also got your tackies and you've got a, like your rugby shorts, rugby jumper, and you've got a number, whatever your number is. You've lost your name, you know our number for the trip. But now, like, we're all relaxed and we get there and we get off and everyone's laughing. And now they say, okay, down, number up, our new numbers, you know, lie down. And then, okay, you've got, whatever, 10 seconds to get onto the truck. Everyone jumps on the truck. Oh, nice and chilled. Bucky's lets out this like a big fart. Next moment, gunshots flies over our heads. Bah, bah. We none of us said a word for the next 4 days. We're just like this. Ja, meneer. Yes, meneer. It was the weirdest.
What time was this at night?
It was at night. It was the weirdest.
How did you go with the chicken?
No, my chicken was up there. I mean, obviously, like good at fire, good at understanding how to brass stuff. So one of the tasks was my favorite night. They just dropped you in the middle of the bush. So you had this tiny little flint and this little match, and then you had to now build your own fire. So I made a big fire, then eventually I made a fire each side because it was so cold, and then you had to cook your own chicken and boil your own egg. So how you boil your egg is like dig a hole, wee in it, bit of coals over the top. So anyway, the next day we couldn't eat it, Bobes. Gubani Boba couldn't resist, so he ate both. So yeah. He obviously got us into trouble
story,
first.
Yeah.
But now you stand there and how they tested your egg was cook was basically crack it on your head. So crack mine, okay, then you can eat it. And Boomer is standing next to me, Selborne. And he's standing there and it just goes, doop, and that egg didn't even, it was not even close to, it just started running all over his face. And poor Boomer was rattled by that. We all were. I mean, we had camp, eh? Jeez, like it.
What was the chicken?
There's so much
what
that happened in that thinking? 4 days.
You're talking about the chicken now, that or when they gave them a live chicken to share?
They gave a live chicken.
Oh, the live chicken?
Yeah.
Tell that. Oh, geez, so that story. So now we obviously...
They gave Joe Fenica.
Yeah, no, we're hungry. So now obviously they give us 2 live chickens. You know, for the sensitive folk out there, like it didn't end well for those chickens. But like Joe had to try now and, you know, break the chicken's neck. But Joe, I mean, it's not really... It's not in his makeup to do this.
Yeah. He was
basically screaming to the chicken to just... Please pass.
Forgive him.
Please forgive me and please pass. He could not do it. And then we eventually gave it to Van Rotenbach to just like, okay, that's the end of it. But, there's so much crammed into those 4 days. This is about a billion stories.
Sorry, something just popped up. Flecky, you and Van Rotenbach, didn't you just try to go beer to beer with him once? You ended up with alcohol poisoning.
No, was it you? No. I wouldn't dare take
but
him.
But Fawn, the story, the rumor has it with Fawn as well. So they go on Stalldrot.
Yeah.
3-4 days. And obviously they have minimal to eat. So they get back, first training session, everybody needs to weigh in. You know, they lost like how many you know, kilograms each person. Fawn comes back, picked up weight.
How?
I don't know.
I remember his farewell dinner out of here before we went to London. Actually, me and John take him out. So we go to a steakhouse. We're having a great time. Fawn orders his second steak. We get the bill. And now, John's had 15 beers and a 400-gram rump. I've had 20 beers and a 400-gram rump. Fawn had 32 beers and a kilogram of steak. Paid the bill and off we went to a nightclub. Me and Joy, we can't even remember paying the bill.
Didn't he drink Bacardi Breezes or something?
That as well, yes. As a starter.
It's the best. We saw him in Bloom last 2 years ago. For the here this long. You can't recognize him.
Really?
But these guys, I came late for dinner. All these guys were sitting around there. And I was thinking, who's this homeless guy sitting next to these things?
It was his birthday.
He looked at me, Fawn Roten.
His birthday last week.
Okay, guys, we're going to have to talk about Six Nations.
Talk about Six Nations as well?
Flicky, what have you made of this year's Six Nations?
Not much, actually, Shim, to be honest.
Great insight there.
No. Okay. Pretty disappointing England, you know, for me. You need the traditional guys to be strong.
Yeah.
France have been disappointing as well. There's only one team in it, really. Patches of brilliance from Scotland, which you always get with Gregor Townsend and the players that he selects, and Finn Russell and Hugh Jones, they set and Duane van der Merwe. I mean, they've all been good, but there's no real competition for Ireland, in my opinion, which has been quite frustrating and disappointing, to be honest. I mean, everyone talks about the Irish now being number one in the world, which, they can't be because, they're not playing against quality opposition, in my opinion. We'll see now when we play South Africa in the inbound test, but for now the Six Nations has been disappointing in terms of it's not. There's one really good genuine side in the Irish team and they deserve that. They are very, very well coached. They've got quality players, but England have been disappointing. France have been disappointing. So
Wales have had their moments.
No, I don't think so, Shimmy. It's a young team. It's an inexperienced team. I don't think, Gatlin has been a phenomenal coach over the decades, but is he a guy to take Wales forward, who's able to play, this modern brand of rugby that Ireland do play? I love the way the Irish play. I you and I have had lots of chats about it, and I think their system is brilliant. I think the whole structure of Irish rugby is outstanding. Yeah. And I think Rassie's probably trying to take a lot out of that Irish system and put it into the South African system, from an administrative point of view and, tracking players and the way we want to play. For the rest, disappointing.
Do you think if England gets their defence right this weekend, let's say it's a wet game, they get their defence right, can they challenge?
I don't think they'll get the defence right against the Irish attack. How far down the box were in our evolution regarding our defence, how good our detail was in around even the tackler getting into one on the far side, creating that extra width. Because they attack so tight and there's such much short passes and the quick recycle of the ball, their breakdown's outstanding. We come up short a lot. And it's just through our work rate and our scramble that we actually managed to stay in the game, stay in the fight. And look, there was nothing in that game out there. But if there's a side to have the weakness or expose the weakness of the rush defence and how narrow we can get, it's Ireland. So, now you take them against England, who's now just implemented this system and they make bad reads 3-4 times a half. Hence, England can't, they haven't been able to put sides away because they just give, points on a platter. I think this Irish side will test them to the max as well.
And I think that England are also struggling with an identity in terms of the way they want to play.
So, they had one during the World Cup. Go back to that.
So Borthwick obviously wants, this kicking game with a strong set piece. But there's still an element there from the Eddie Jones era that wants to play a bit of rugby. So you look at that first try they scored against Scotland. It was a phenomenal try.
Beautiful starter.
But then they reverted back to type and then they became, this conservative side and they couldn't back it up with the set piece and the defence. So,
but that's the thing for me. If, let's say you get the scenario on the weekend where it's the same conditions as when the Box played England in the semi-final of the World Cup.
And England own it.
Okay. And they get No, no, I won't say they own it, but they get a good start. Yeah. It's wet, so it's slower, and you get an Irish side that's off on the day. You know, one lucky try. That's the only way I see England winning this one. Yeah. If that plays out that way.
I don't know if the if you take the box, like if we are super physical, so we can sometimes you take the first 20 minutes in that game against Ireland, Damien the Islander over the gain line. Yeah. Peter Steph over the gain line. Our big ball carriers fronted up. And the underrated part of the Irish game is their physicality. Their set piece is outstanding. Their breakdown is so, so good. You know, so many times we watch VURC, Dion Free cleans up at the breakdown. He plays against Leinster. Leinster's breakdown is just
because
good.
They attack so tight.
It's going to be hard for England this weekend.
Yeah, I agree.
But Flick, is it a matter of damage control then for England? So they come out there... Lose 16-15. It's a heroic loss. England are back. Yeah. Or, you know, they go back to what they did in the World Cup, which almost took them to a final with a minute to go in a semi and say, listen, we're going to be conservative. Because what you're hearing while reading the newspapers is that England, the players are saying we're focusing a lot more on defense than attack. And we've all been there in teams where all you do is focus on opposition, defense. Guys turn around and say, what are we going to do when we get the ball? Because we're actually not looking at our strengths.
Well, again, what I'm saying is that the only way England wins this game is if the conditions plays in their favour, they get a bit of luck on the day and Ireland's off their game. And that's a lot of ifs, variables
there.
Yeah, I don't think they're good enough at the moment
there's not enough
to go toe-to-toe with Ireland in an open... flat-out game and get a result. You know, it's almost like the Bulls versus the Stormers this weekend. If the Bulls open it up and kicked long and kicked out of structure and played against the Stormers,
gives them a chance.
They were in trouble. The Stormers would have come back at that game. But if they keep it tight, yes, maybe they can put them under pressure. They're very good Irish side, guys, especially this year. They've come out strong.
Marcus Smith and Alex Mitchell back. I think Mitchell's the big one because with his box kicking, you're talking about that. Marcus Smith, Flicky?
I don't think he's the answer, to be honest. Look, great club player, and you know, against probably lesser test sides, you know, he will always open them up. But you know, if you're marking yourself against the best, which is the box and Irish defence systems, I don't think he can unlock them. I think he's too erratic. He'll try the miracle stuff, which may come off. But in terms of general game management point of view, I don't think he's got what it takes, you know, to deliver the killer blow against those top sides. I mean, the one guy I do think who can do that is Finn Russell. I mean, he's proven it time and time again. But for me, Marcus is not the answer for me.
But like if Marcus Smith was playing for Scotland, where they've got a different mindset, where they attack,
he'd find that team.
Like Duane Funamadova, third try is exactly that. Turnover ball, Finn, probably the worst kick of his life, gets charged down, somehow lands in a Scottish hand, gets over the gain line, very next touch is a cross kick again.
Yeah.
You know, like he's not afraid of making mistakes. And I think this English side, because they are not playing the amount of rugby that Scotland would want to play, if you make a mistake, it gets amplified.
Yeah.
And I don't think that suits him. Where at Harlequins, he can play.
Do whatever he can play.
And he also got Esther Hayes in there next to you. So do whatever you want, pop it to the big guy.
Yeah.
He does the damage. You get fast ball and then you got space again.
You probably need to question the set phases of England as well and their pack.
It's definitely not where it should be.
Whether they can stand up to the Irish pack.
But every great English team has had a good pack of forwards, a strong.
Yeah.
If you look at 2000, they had a hell of a pack of forwards.
That side that we played against in, you know, that won the 2003 World Cup, whatever it was. But we, was it 2003?
Yeah.
Yeah, just 2003,
You know, we played against them in that series in Bloom when they came down here. And that side was unbelievably physical. So it's Martin Johnson, it's Danny Grucock, it's Lawrence Delaglio, it's Richard Hill. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And these guys were tough, uncompromising men, you know, with a very, very strong set piece. And then they had these electric, you know, backline players in Will Greenwood, you know, Austin Healey, Mark Catch, you know, and they just had a proper side. But it was all built around that pack.
That pack was...
And that was Leicester. That's Leicester's golden era, where they're dominating Europe.
Well, we experienced in 2004, remember at Twickenham, when he played England, and that was the end, that after the World Cup.
That was...
It was
and then they had that fly off, what's his name?
Also played
for he was okay. He was okay.
Kicked with the left foot, man.
No, sometimes kick with the right foot.
Yeah, sometimes I didn't really miss many kicks.
Yeah, geez, yeah. Like it.
He was all right.
Mr. Wilkinson.
He was okay.
Yeah. Guys, we're sitting here enjoying the sun, and then we get a quote from Ireland or Wales, that Ireland are the best team in the world, from Sam Warburton. How?
It's his opinion.
Yeah?
It's his opinion.
But we enjoying ourselves here peacefully, playing ERC. Yeah,
why are you talking about
enjoying, enjoying to me. Well, Victor came back with a double bell shotgun and said, what have they won? Victor Matfield on Twitter.
Oh, did he?
Did he?
Yeah.
Fair play.
It's a big statement. Look, they're playing.
It's a very big statement.
Fantastic rugby, Ireland, but I think Flecky made a fair point in you need to take in consideration and have perspective in terms of who they've played against and the quality of the opposition, because it's not the French team that we saw in the World Cup, and bar that there hasn't been a lot of
competition. Look, it sells more tickets for the series coming.
The nice thing for us is they're coming out here in June, and that's going to be a proper test for both. And I mean, we all love the way Ireland play. We all love the way Leinster plays, the same thing. You know, the way they set up that attack, how they can boss the ball, they outwork you in attack, and like they set quicker than you can set in defence. So we all love that. But like the proper test is coming down here. Yeah. And you know, I can remember in 2016, I thought they had a big chance under Alistair Coetzee to get a serious result. They obviously got the first test, the CJ Stunder, Pat Lambie charge down here at Newlands. And then Damien Allender scored that thing, a cracking try to clinch the game up north. So, you know, still haven't won yet. So this will be proper.
So big statement coming up from there. Look, I mean, it's also, you go back to the great New Zealand teams that for 24 years, good teams, but didn't win a World Cup. Mm. You know, then you had Richie McCaw. I mean, what is 2011, 2015, considered the greatest All Black team of all time. This Ireland team is missing that. I mean, those are the facts. So it's not my opinion. It's the facts right there and there. Yeah. So they can go back-to-back Grand Slams. They can beat New Zealand. But then to solidify their legacy, I think they need that trophy.
Yeah, they have to.
You can't really.
And look, if they come to South Africa and win both the test matches, yeah, that's a massive statement.
Yes.
But I don't think you can. You need to compare apples with apples. And by saying that might be your opinion, but the Springboks are still world champions and ranked number one in the world.
And so not playing at the moment.
That's factually true. So, you know, I mean, I can say that I like them.
So you agree with Victor?
I can say that I like them more than you, but I won't. I won't, because it's not factually
true. But you agree with Victor?
Because it's not factually true.
we agree with Matt Fielder.
Jean and his cryptic.
Oh, no.
We agree with Matt Fielder.
Don't tell me now.
I've just said it in a long way. You agree with what Matt Field said. He said, what have they won?
I don't do social media. Is this social media what you're doing now?
Yeah, I think so.
You're on social media. You're on Twitter, and your first tweet was, I'm on Twitter now. Is John Kaiser following
me? It's a safe zone.
you did write that.
That wasn't me.
It was you. Someone was running your Twitter account.
Yeah.
We do our research on the box office.
Do you?
Yeah. Okay. We don't talk about the Andre Fenter incident.
Bloemfontein.
No,
what's that?
Why? No. Please, no.
Okay, what else? What other games are happening?
No, there's a lot of questions.
Did I get banned? Yes.
Yeah. Skeller, didn't you play that game? The Curry Cup game?
No, it's just...
When him and Andy, he decided to take on
Andre Fenter in the scuffle. I did play a game. Me and John did play a game in what year was it? Of 2004 against the Cheetahs.
Yeah.
Where Flecky refused to speak to his fluff.
So I was number 12, and we had Chris Rousseau at 10, and Flecky at 13, and they wouldn't speak to each other.
What happened?
We're having a fight on the field.
He said he was kicking everything away. And Flecky
he didn't want to listen.
Was Bob playing? It was Bob and Corne, the other loose forwards.
No, that was against Andre Fenton.
Yeah, that was against Andre Fenton. I was playing this one.
Yeah.
And we're going to scuffle with Andre Fenton. Somehow, boot ended up on Andre's face here, cutting him open.
And then he basically just held Flecky like this
ran
and
to the back.
They held Flecky down and let the blood just like just drip on his face.
Luister gou hiervoor my. I did listen.
And how long was your suspension?
I think I got 3 weeks. I think he only got one game. He appealed.
Yeah.
But it didn't look good. But you know, we mates. You know, it was tough. That's what it was.
That's rugby.
It was, you know, there were lots of things said, and lots of punches thrown in that game, and Rassie was also playing forward.
I was playing, I remember that game. John Smith, which was one of his first Curry Cup games. I still
did
remember.
Did he play?
John Smith at halftime.
Were you playing for the Cheetahs?
Yeah, at halftime, John Smith sat there in the chair and was like, Jesus, fast out there. Because yeah. He just sat there like,
no, there was always a bit of a grudge between Western Province and the Cheetahs in those days, and actually stemmed from the you know, it was also the FC 97, Smith. The 97, the FC Smith incident. But it also the 97 when we beat them at Newlands in the Curry Cup final.
Yeah.
And then there was lots of competition within the Springbok camp, you know, between various players. And it was always quite a
I remember when I came in there, game. Like, it was also that, like, probably a hangover from that. But, like, I think first ruck I was in, Rassie punched me.
Yeah.
So it's okay. That's fine. I'll
look, and I think that's how it was.
Try and get you back.
But you know, that was a tough incident. You know, and we chatted to each other afterwards. I mean, and we actually, when we sat in the tribunal, we almost worked together so that we would get off lightly. So, like, we had a chat before and said, listen, let's just shake hands and
leave it.
Agree and leave it, and so that we can walk away and still play for the remainder of the season. Because at one stage, it was looking like both of us were going to get a heavy ban.
Yeah, Andre Fenton on top of you, holding you, bleeding on the face.
You're not getting out of that one.
You're not getting out of that one. Guys, Scotland, Italy. Can Italy, do it?
No.
In Italy. That must be France last weekend. None of us saw that coming. No.
I'm going Scotland.
Yeah.
I'm going Scotland.
Scotland.
Our team we picked last week, I don't know how many of those guys would make the Springbok setup as a squad or team
from last Scotland. Week.
Yeah. No, we picked the international 15 playing overseas. So Joan van der Merwe is probably the one. Carl Steyn, fullback, was played for the Bulls. He's in Japan now. Played for the Stormers, man.
Gerrit van Heerfer.
The center.
No, I don't think
Pierre Schoeman.
I don't think any of them.
Sebastian Negri.
I don't think any of them makes it.
Duan in the squad? Not in the team, in the squad maybe?
No, he can make a squad.
Yeah, definitely make it.
Pierce Schoeman,
You have Cheslin Kolbe.
Kanan
Moody.
I know who the Springbok wings are. You have to repeat
Makazole Mapimpi.
I know who the Springbok wings are.
And Makazole Mapimpi, Shami.
Okay, cool.
So why do you ask the question if you
know
the answer?
Okay, he's asked. Funny. You enjoying yourself, Ricky? Wales versus France.
It's better than being in the office.
Wales versus France.
Wales.
Where are they playing this one?
Cardiff. I'm going Wales.
No, I'm going France.
No,
I'm going France as well.
We go France. I think I've said it from the start. I think Wales' problem is Italy. I think young team, you get up for the big games. They can easily be complacent against Italy. When is that game happening? Is there another round of Six Nations? Okay.
No, I'm also going France.
France.
Mm.
Okay. You guys, on to the predictions. Before we've asked, Italy versus Scotland. We all agree Scotland. Okay, Scotland. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes. Scotland. Yes.
Someone pressed the rewind button.
No, you're jumping on
things. Now we're going back.
So I lost concentration. Someone was walking outside.
Yeah.
Italy versus Scotland.
Scotland.
England versus Ireland. And it's raining.
Ireland.
It's raining a lot.
Ireland.
Yeah?
Ireland.
Ireland, yeah.
Ireland all the way.
Ireland.
If Ireland gets a bonus point win this weekend, they win the Six Nations.
With the round record. To go.
With the round to go. Six Nations might be over after this round.
Okay.
That's not.
I'm going to say England. I'm going to say England.
I like that, Shami.
Yeah. It's raining, apparently. Wales, France?
France.
Why would you say France? I just want France away from home. They almost lost to Italy. So they almost lost to Italy at home. They're playing Wales away.
It's because they almost lost to Italy at home that I'm backing them to beat Wales in Wales.
They've got some decent players.
Where are France touring after the Six Nations this year? Media tour.
I have no idea.
I want to tell you.
Because I tell you what, Flaky, just you look at this. England have got Ireland now. They go to New Zealand with a new coach. So you look at the pressure Borthwick's under.
Yeah.
Now going there. Ireland come here, obviously, we've spoken about that. But for me, this French team just sort of stays at home the whole time. They never really tour. And I think that's one of the problems why they bomb out of World Cups and they don't do well internationally. Is because these guys just love to play at home and in Europe.
Did they not tour?
Has DuPont come to South Africa before?
DuPont. Yeah.
Has Dupont come to South Africa?
No.
Tamek?
No.
That big, they've obviously come with their club sides, but none of them actually can't come to South Africa.
They don't have games.
New Zealand.
How big is the pressure on Galtier? There must be some lingering pressure coming.
There's a...
Because they should have been 0-3 in this tournament.
I don't see any games for France.
The Scottish
apparently game. There's some pressure on the defence coach. That's what...
Okay. That's coming out.
It's coming out.
Blame the defence coach.
Hey?
France.
Flicky, it's been good having you here while Jean de Villiers messes around. Good to have Bishop's royalty here.
Thank you, Shim. Thank you very much for having me.
We got you some time out the office.
You did? Thank you.
When are you going to invite us to Komiki?
Komabiki.
Jean and Skulk have been there quite a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That hurts. You hurt my feelings now.
No, Shami, you all three of you are welcome to come there any day. Mm.
Thanks,
Skala, thank you very much. You guys enjoy your hunting trip.
Off tomorrow.
He'll have one big night in him. And then when you guys go out on the second day, he'll be in his room crying.
We're not going... nothing there. You don't go out. If you go out, you're there.
You sit on the back of a bucky and you're having... A beverage of your
choice. How big is the crowd?
Argentina. France is touring Argentina.
A nice one.
But they do that every year, man.
Yeah. How big is the crowd for the Calori?
That's a big crowd.
Is it?
14.
Can you drop any names? Who's...
Yeah, drop some names there.
Skulk and other Skulk.
We've got some... Yeah, there's some... Lekker no, rugby players. Other Skulk's not going.
Farid Depreer.
Farid Depreer.
Oh.
Dani Rousseau.
Oh.
Rousseau.
Oh.
Rugby
Strauss. Adrian Strauss.
Royalty.
Furi de Pria. Johan Roots.
Okay. Tell him what's happening.
It sounds like all the Bulls players. Yeah.
Jaco Pretorius.
Jaco Pretorius.
Another Bulls.
Fernando Olivier?
No.
JP Nal?
No.
No.
He's in Russia.
Okay.
He's in Russia with Gary Buerta coaching, eh?
Gary Buerta? No.
No.
No, the hooker's there. Ask him. All right, on that note. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. Enjoy the Kalahari boys with no hookers. Robbie Fleck, thank you very much for joining us. Ex Weinberg and Bishop's boy. We'll be catching up on the school fields out here. But Fleck, you're really good. Thanks for the insight. And yeah, good to catch up with you. See you in Komiki soon.
Thanks.
Cheers, brother. The box office is now closed.
Well done, Shim.
Well done, Shim. He's a natural. Eh?
Yeah, well done, Shim.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.